This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
Hi, I'm Russell Lolliker, and I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
Welcome to A Productive Conversation. It's me, Mike Vardy, and I am joined today by my good friend, somebody who I hang out with on a regular basis. In fact, you'll find out how regular when we have this conversation. It's Russell Lolliker. He is an international speaker and the founder and host of Relationships at Work. It's a leadership mindset guide to creating a workplace we love. And it's a show digging into timely and relevant topics with global experts on how to be better leaders and create healthy workplace cultures. Russell has a wealth of experience in this arena, as well as in other arenas such as movies. We get into movies. We actually talk a little bit about a movie and how leadership is demonstrated and relationships at work are demonstrated, using it as kind of like a mini case study. So you're going to want to check out that part. Comes near the tail end of our conversation. But let's get into the very beginning of our conversation. Here's my conversation with my good friend, Russell Lolliker. Enjoy. Russell, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today. This has been a long time coming. Considering we're well over 500 episodes in, well, not well over, but we're a shade over 500 episodes in at this point. And we've known each other for a long time. Longer than I've been the productivityist, I think.
Yes. Yep.
Like back to the Vardy.me days.
Yeah.
So for those, I mean, you've spoken at the Big Ready twice, both in person and virtually. So for those that are unfamiliar with you, share a little bit about yourself right off the top.
Sure. Hi, Mike. Sure. So my name is Russell Lolliker. I am the creator of Relationships at Work, which is a focus on helping leaders shift their mindset to fix the workplace and the impact they have on workplace culture. I've been in the leadership and communication space for about 2 decades now. I don't like increasing that number because it just makes me sound older than I like to admit to the rest of the world. I've worked in the private sector. I've worked in the public sector. I've had the pleasure of speaking at multiple events, including yours. I was graciously invited to speak. That's me, man. My passion is to treat people better. That's my passion.
So it's interesting because one of the things that we've talked about, we get together every Sunday, Russell and I, for those that are, you know, that you want to see behind the scenes. So every Sunday we have a weekly working session where we plan. Sometimes we plan more than in other sure. times. Example, we're recording this the day I normally only record on Wednesdays. Today we actually are recording on a Sunday, and literally we talked about Oppenheimer and a bunch of other stuff for about 30 to 40 minutes before we actually get into the gear. So we didn't actually have to do any warm up before our chat today. We already are kind of familiar with each other. But one thing that I have to say is when we've had those sessions, we share a lot of, insights. And one of the things that you shared with me that I was unaware of is the idea that the term soft skills is no longer in vogue. And the interesting thing for me is that when I was working at Costco, that was one thing that they said, you've got all the hard skills in the world for this role, but you need to work on your soft skills. So first off, there may be, you may have to kind of couch this with what were soft skills. What's some of the nomenclature we're seeing now that kind of helps improve, not only the discourse going on about these kind of skill sets, but also, frankly, improves relationships at work as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, soft skills has been around forever. And I think it was originally brought up because it was just in response to, quote unquote, as you mentioned, hard skills, the skills to do the job. And then these soft skills were the human-centered part of it. And that's what we really talk about a lot now is human-centered skills. The problem is most people put into a Google search soft skills still. So you'll still very much still see that term being used. But in the workplace, a lot more movement away from that. You'll see human resources are now usually called people and culture. That's where they're trying to get away from this whole different way of speaking. Mm-hmm. Soft skills being a big part of that. So you'll see leadership as well being used almost hand in hand with the idea of these human-centered skills. Because again, the supervisor, the manager is the to-do list, is the produce a thing, while the leader is much more the human development, empathy, compassion. That's more the path. So I like saying human-centered. I know we're still going to say soft skills, but it's really the same thing we're talking about.
Do you think, and I've had conversations with Daniel Coyle before, who wrote The Culture Code, and he's we'll link back to that episode as our related conversation for sure. But one thing that I was going to touch on with you is this idea of culture and how it seems to be, speaking of something that is constantly rearing, up in the world, is we got to improve our company culture. We got to improve our company culture. That's going to help us with employee engagement. Do you find that to be the case, or do you think we're putting too much energy, and leadership in particular, is putting too much energy in this culture equation when there's something else maybe that they need to be looking at first and foremost?
Well, it's yes and no, actually, is the answer to that. Because truthfully, I've heard that from a lot of people. We need to fix our culture. We need to craft our culture. I've heard that from executives. And yet, 9 times out of 10, they don't realize that they already have a culture. They probably have 10,000 subcultures that are going in defense or in, relation to the culture they think they have. Most executives that say words like that are more out of touch with what's actually happening with their organization than they should be. And I think if a lot of leaders, culture is by far the lifeblood of an organization. It's what people get up and look forward to doing every day. Not the work necessarily, but also the people that is around them, the people they get to interact with, the cultural norms, what's accepted, what's not accepted. And I say that people are excited to do this, but let's be honest, it could also be horrific too.
Right.
Cultures are horrible for a lot of organizations too. And I was even having a discussion today with someone on LinkedIn, and they were talking about how people don't leave companies, they leave bad bosses. And I'm like, actually, that's not true. They leave cultures that allow for bad bosses.
Right.
Because you can have a bad boss and that person gets fixed, addressed, reprimanded. You as an employee were like, oh, that's the kind of culture we have. We have a culture that doesn't allow bad behavior. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen very often, and that's what employees leave, is that kind of culture. So in a nutshell, culture absolutely is essential. Unfortunately, most organizations think from the top down they need to craft something without actually having any situational awareness of what already is.
Well, in speaking of situational awareness, do you think that when it comes to building and fostering and nurturing relationships at work, that there is this preconceived notion or this kind of drive to find quick fixes or hack it for life, because you know how I feel about life hacks, but hack it rather than, spend the concerted time and effort and energy to actually cultivate those relationships? Are you finding that that's something that, and this may be a loaded question, so if you need to take it in the direction, absolutely. But do you find that that's something that's happening? And if so, how does one kind of circumvent that?
Absolutely. Freaking-lutely. How many times do you do a presentation where they're like, what are your takeaways? What are your quick takeaways? And that's always BS, because at the end of the day, it's about mind shift. It's about mindset. And unfortunately, most and I'll put air quotes, leaders, are trying quick fixes. And it's not their fault. They're in 170 meetings throughout the day. So they're looking for quick little to-do list. Oh, if I just do these three things, then I'll have a great culture. When really those relationships are built over time. This is always boggles my mind, is that we treat work like it's different than life. So that once you go through these doors or you turn on this monitor, suddenly how we interact with people, how we build trust, how we build relationships is somehow different than we do with our friends and family. When the ingredients are exactly the same thing, consistency, availability, honesty. And a lot of leaders, again with the air quotes, don't understand that this is intentional time rather than being some commodity that jumps from meeting to meeting to meeting. They have to be intentional and understand it's a long game, not a quick fix. As in all our relationships in life, at work is no different.
So where do you start? Like, where does a leader start if they recognize this? Because I think that I would think that a leader would want this to happen. I mean, a good leader would want this to would want the relationships at work to work and not just, you know, have them be, you know, frenetic or hodgepodge, like something that not only can happen with one particular employee, but like everybody on the team. So where do you start?
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today.
You start with yourself more than anything else. I like to actually pull it back even further and understand that there are three ways of looking at everything in an organization, especially as a leader when you're looking to build those relationships. Looking at it from the air, the land, and the sea, to use a metaphor.
Sure.
So from the air is understanding there's an environment that you have no control over, absolutely none. When that person goes home, they're dealing with financial issues, family issues, sickness, trauma, just there's so many things that happen that impact the world that we work in. So understanding that that is a part that where you're going to have to show some empathy and compassion, regardless of the fact that you have any say, is a big first step, is that awareness. Then understanding situational awareness, which we just talked about, mm-hmm. is that what is the existing culture? What's your awareness of that is existing culture? What is your footprint on a day-to-day basis to the existing culture? And then back is the sea level, which I like to look under. The metaphor works, Mike. The
sure,
metaphor
no,
works.
No, I get it. I like it. The underneath, the layers below.
The go surface. Below the surface. Looking at yourself and understanding self-awareness. Mm-hmm. I always say the biggest superpowers you have is situational and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And if you can understand who shows up, how you react in any given situation, how you react to feedback, how you react to truth to power, how you react when things don't go your way. It's really important to understand that. So I think to answer your question of where do you start with yourself and understand your ecosystem in the world of work, because you have to understand what you're bringing to the table before you can understand the world around you.
So again, let's dovetail from that into obviously people who are running organizations, large or small. You know, time is a crunch, right? We know that. We know that the and the thing is this to me feels like a qualitative element more than a quantitative one. I'm not saying that it won't have quantitative dividends, but it's not apparent up front, right? Like we hear about, you know, you hear about retention rates, but sure, but that one really, really good person left. So that number is skewed, because if you've got somebody that's kicking butt and they leave, they shouldn't represent that just single number, because obviously there's a domino effect. So for somebody who wants to start to, you know, again, look inward, figure this stuff out, but they also have to deal with all of the quantitative data points and everything else that's going on. How do they make time for that?
Again, we go back to the word of intention. So I had in one organization I worked in, I had the highest retention rate across the entire organization. One of the, like 12 years, I had the exact same team. And the reasons I had that was because I made it about them. Hmm. I did a few things. One, I booked time with them, half hour. The frequency was really based on them. So it was a half an hour of their time. And I just shut up and asked questions. I just got super curious. And in that half an hour, it could be about professional development. It could be about their home life. It could be about a business area that they're having some difficulties with. It could be about the work itself. Hell, it could be about absolutely anything, but it is their decision and their time.
Right.
And whether it goes to 30 minutes or 5 minutes, it doesn't matter. I'm just there to be a support, a friend, a guide. I tried to cancel these every once in a while because I was like, do they really? I got my head ripped off a few times. They loved them because it made them build a connection with me, as well as helped me better understand them. And the innovation that came out of that, the creativity that came out of that, because I was understanding them as a person and allowing them that space to be their whole selves, they certainly brought that into their work in day to day, but that was just our own time to do that in. So if anything, is book and block the time, because if you're choosing to go to your 17th meeting over choosing to sit down with your team and your staff, you're not a leader.
Right. Well, and I think also it allows you to see the nuances of that relationship over time, because I mean, and I can't tell you how many times, and I use this as an example a lot when I'm working with leaders or managers, and those aren't always the same. You can be a manager and not necessarily a leader. But they'll say, like, I've got all these reviews to do, and it's annual review time. I'm like, so that shouldn't be a huge issue for you. And they're like, what do you mean? It's annual review. Like, I have to do all – I'm like, but if you were doing bit by bit, month over month, then number one – you get recency. You aren't a victim of recency bias, right? Because you're only thinking about the thing that's recent, right? You're not looking at like all of the story of the year. You're looking at the last 30 days, 2 weeks, what have you, right? It's funny because say, well, I make notes and so on. Yeah, but what you're talking about, those 30 minutes, that to me cultivates a truer, more genuine appraisal. Right. Not just of the person's performance, but of so much more, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. And having those annual or like every 2 years surveys are meaningless because, and I've heard this from a lot of people in the HR area, is if it goes well, they'll, you know, put out the fireworks. If it goes bad, they'll just say, well, it was just a moment in time.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely pointless as a trend, as a listening tool, as a VOE tool, voice of the employee. But if you're, and to your point, if you're having these regular meetings, mm-hmm. you are getting, like my meetings to start versus my meetings a decade later were completely different.
Yeah.
Because we're friends. Mm-hmm. I know so much more complexities as the person, what motivates them, what their values are, how they want to be engaged with. I know them so much better over time that I am of more value to them as their leader.
Okay. So this is actually interesting because I'm sure somebody out there is like, but I don't want to be their friend. So how does that, so is it just a language thing in terms of that? Because obviously the idea of treating someone as in a friendly manner or being friendly with them or being a friend versus being having this hierarchical role, even though there might be and structurally there is there, so you don't go and necessarily hang out with the people that, you know, afterwards, but they are friends, they're colleagues, right? It really puts, that's part of the whole equation, I would imagine, right?
Absolutely. I like the word colleagues. Yes, I'm going to use the word friends. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to be their friends. So when I ask that, I'm like, why? Why? Yeah. Is it because you don't want to have that personal relationship with them? Okay. So them as humans doesn't matter to you. Mm-hmm. It's about the work. Great. They'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like if they don't have a human connection and feel like what they do matters and feel like their leader cares about them as human beings, then you're looking at them like a cog in a wheel and not a person. Like for somebody that says, I don't want to be friends with my staff, great. You shouldn't have people report to you. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be in you should be in a bunker somewhere doing a great job, but not as being that responsible for other human beings.
Right.
Now, I say this, it's a blanket statement, knowing full well there are tons of diverse and different cultures. Neurodivergent, I find really interesting as a diverse sect that engages differently, that understands emotional cues differently. I think they all can be very connected, and everybody can find some common ground in familiarity, in personalization. Friends is such a triggering word for a lot of people because it feels like, oh, we have to be Facebook friends now.
Right. That's there's a vulnerability factor there that they may not be comfortable with.
Totally. And yet vulnerability is one of the most powerful things you can display in the workplace to build the connection that motivates people. Mm-hmm. So this is uncomfortable for a lot of people. It's a lot of leaders don't have this skill set, don't understand that they have to dive in to understand this. And I feel bad for a lot of leaders because they're put in positions of no professional development, no training. They're just there because they fix somebody's problem or somebody likes them, not because they're really good at actually leading humans. And that's what I'm trying to lean towards.
I want to shift gears for a second because something literally came to mind as we were talking about this. We talked about me seeing the movie Oppenheimer like yesterday. So let's deconstruct that a little bit. Now, keeping in mind that what we're talking about is a fictional dramatization of what happened in that movie. So, for example, we know Oppenheimer is a real person, so on and so forth, but we don't know what happened inside the room. For those of you who have not seen Oppenheimer yet, we're not going to really spoil anything here. All we're going to say is he led a team, right? He was in charge of a project, and he wasn't put in charge of the project because of who he was and what he brought to the table and all that. But he was a theorist, right? He was theoretical. So he even said, I don't make the thing. I give you the information and then you make the thing. And if it works, then my theories were correct. And if we don't, we go back to the drawing board. So when I'm thinking about this film and I'm thinking about the conversation we're having right now, I remember scenes where he is in front of the room and he's got what, a dozen, 15 different physicists, all with varying levels of expertise that he brought in. What, when you, thinking back, and I remember, I'm asking you to think back, like, for, because you saw it, like, you're a big movie fan too. So you
opening
saw it, like,
weekend.
Yeah, yeah. You saw it, like, opening weekend. I saw it, like, as soon as I could see it at the theater that I really wanted to see it at. If hopefully I've given you time to think back to what those relationships look like. And again, we know that there's flaws and all that stuff. And but I'd love you to, like, kind of think about that for a second and ask yourself, like, was in that, in the context of that movie and the way that he was portrayed, was he displaying strong relationships at work vibes for you, or was it a mix?
I think it was a mix. I mean, with my relationships at work, leadership, communication lens, he was, the thing is that they were all in the same rowboat rowing in the same direction to some degree.
Right.
Their whole point was that they wanted to achieve a thing. Spoilers, atomic bomb. So that a common vision is astronomically powerful for everybody feeling like they're all a team, they're cohesive, they have a common vision. They can argue, much like a lot of the scientists did in that movie, and I'm sure in real life, but at least they all knew there was a common purpose, a common good, I guess.
Yeah, fair. there was some obviously there's moral ambiguity attached to some of what they were doing, but I mean, that aside, we're looking at it from almost like an objective point of view. So that's exactly what you're getting at, like the diverse, because there's a lot of diversity in that group.
Absolutely. And different ways of thinking. But they all were pulling in the same direction. Obviously a bit more drama for the sake of a movie.
Sure.
But they all had a vision of solving a problem to beat another country in that success. Like, there was competitiveness. There was achievement of brilliance. So I think the relationship there was, and I love this example because I've heard it over and over again, is stop talking about the workplace as a family. Start looking them like a sports team.
Right. Netflix. The Netflix idea, right? Like, we're not a family. We're a sports team. Some of us are, we have some star players, but there's a lot of us that are just, yeah. We'll definitely link, because I talked to, oh my goodness, it's escaping me right now, but there's an episode where this came up. I'll make sure to link to it in the show notes.
And that's, you need people to be the top performers, but you also need those people that are just keeping the machine running, that are, you know, so it's, I think there were relationships. They were certainly a different type of people. I can't even begin to understand being brilliant at that level.
Sure.
But there were relationships, absolutely, there.
All right, let's continue to go down this rabbit hole a bit with a different film, though, because I know you're into, like, can you think of, no, but seriously, like, can you think of a film where you're like that person that's leading this team or leading this, you know, whatever this initiative, they are exhibiting the kind of traits that we need to see more with their team? Because you and I've had conversations about customer relationships, right? Like how to be making sure that we're taking care of the customer and so on and so forth. That's all well and good, but this is an area that I know you're focusing on because it's an area that needs work, right? So can you, and if you can't, that's fine, but can you think of an example of one where you're like, yeah, this is a good example of, you know, what I'm trying to set, you know, what I share and what I teach in action?
Oh man, no, I can't think of anything. Not at the top of my freaking head. I mean, immediately I'm thinking of any sports movie ever.
Right.
Like in the team, like Hoosiers. Sure. Like, there's, except, you know, Dennis Hopper having his own emotional struggles in that movie. But I think really it's about respecting everybody and understanding the value of what they're bringing to the table. And I mean, that was one of the key factors of my success in retention, was that it wasn't just personalizing it and understanding people. It was also connecting the work that they did had genuine beneficial value to those that they were helping. They were serving, the connective tissue of it all. And I see that. I mean, pick a movie. I mean, as much as I'm a movie nerd, I'm like, I don't know, Mike. I didn't do my research.
So the reason I ask this is because, you know, when I see a film or a movie, like, and I think this has a lot to do with the fact that, and I've talked about this before, you know, having done comedy and stuff, there's always that in the back of my mind. So whenever I'm watching something, it does somehow connect to whatever my vocation or calling is right now. Like, so that's why I'm able to like write a, you know, piece about like the Royal Rumble and why 2 minutes isn't really 2 minutes, right? You know what I mean? Like, who's going to think about that? But that's the creative aspect. But let's circle back to something I mentioned, which is, which I think is worth diving into a bit more, is why are organizations so much more focused on making sure the relationship with the customer is so strong, as opposed to making sure that the relationship with the employees is strong? I wouldn't say that one is more, like, I don't think one is more important than the other, but certainly it seems to me that one definitely has precedence over the other. And is that, number one, fair? Is that appropriate? And it, either way, is it something that, how do you address it?
It's funny. There is so many different theories around this, but I mean, the default is customer equal money.
Yeah.
Period. Employee equals cost center.
Yes.
That's generally what has always been. I mean, my pivot, as you mentioned, I used to be in the customer service realm. That's very much where I focused all my attention, my brand, everything. And I'm at a conference in 2018 in San Francisco speaking, and I thought I'd ask around at this customer service conference about employees. And the glazed looks I got were just sort of like, oh, right, we should do something with those people too. Like, they were just... couldn't reason that was a priority. Of course, a lot has changed since COVID. A lot has changed since the pandemic and people realizing the employees have a voice too. And thank goodness. I mean, I even did a Google search back, Amazon search at around that time to look at how many books were about the customer experience and how many were the employee experience.
Right.
And there was like 100 times more around the customer.
Right.
Thankfully, we are shifting that. The mindset across the board is, and I think what's forced most organizations is because employees were quitting.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, you can do that? Oh, wait, now we have to care about you? And certainly during the pandemic, we learned very quickly who were the good leaders and who were the horrible leaders, because that is such a great litmus test, is emergencies. Yeah. And we learned a lot from that. So I think the shift is already happening a lot of organizations. And if the leadership isn't going to start moving towards the employee, and I don't mean to discount the customer or to take away from the customer, but understand the employee is the one that's interacting with those customers. They're the ones that are the ambassador, the advocate of the organization and the brand. And if they don't feel part of something, valued, feeling like a human that is valued, then they're not going to bring their best selves, their best sales self, their best customer service rep self. We're human beings. So of course you have to treat us as such so we can do our jobs better.
Before we wrap up, I want to make sure that we give the listener out there, and we have more than one, but I'm talking to you, the listener, three. Right now. We have three, all three of you. What's one productive action that somebody can take today that will help get them that much closer to improving their relationships at work? And we'll look at this from the leadership standpoint. That way they can walk away and go, okay, I'm going to start this, you know, I mean, for us, it'd be tomorrow because tomorrow's Monday, but you know, whenever you're listening to this, this is when you can take this and run with it.
Block off 15 minutes and have a chat with a team member that has nothing to do with work. Talk to them like a person. Hear how their day went, what they're looking forward to, just as a person, not about work, but as a person that shows up that you're responsible for. 15 minutes in a calendar, and be precious about it.
All All right. Well, there you go. That's your assignment, everybody. Thanks so much, Russell, for being here today. It's been, like I said, it's been a long time. Where can people keep up with the work that you're doing? I know you got the podcast, which I definitely want you to share, but where else can people learn more about what you're doing and keep connected?
And the amazing Mike Vardy was a guest, and we talked about time and the employee sense, leadership sense.
This is true.
Relationshipsatwork.ca. You can find my website. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, my newsletter. It's all available. LinkedIn, especially. Spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. Please, let's talk leadership. Let's talk employee engagement. I do love talking about it.
Thanks for having a productive conversation with me today, my friend.
My pleasure, sir. See you Sunday.
Thanks to Russell for taking the time to join me on this episode. You can find all of the relevant show notes, including related podcast conversations, related blog posts, all that fun stuff at productivityist.com/podcast504. That's it for this episode. I would love to see you back for the next episode and the next one and the next one. So don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and rate and review the podcast. That way we know that you were here, and we know what we can improve upon and what you liked. We want to also know what you like to purchase, what you like to check out, and you can support the show by checking out the sponsors you heard during our conversation today. Head to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors to check them out, and that way they know that we sent you to them. Again, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me today. I know your time is precious, so I really appreciate it. And until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.